Welcome to the Empowerment Zone with Ramona Houston, where we zone in on Black and Brown relations and our journey to empowering our communities.
Thank you for joining the Empowerment Zone. I am your host, Ramona Houston. As you all know, the arts is so important to our lives individually, collectively, and as a community. And, you know, all of us love listening to some good music. We love watching a great performance. We love going to museums and seeing some great art. And so I am absolutely delighted that I have cousin Dr. Daryl Harris. He is a full professor in the theater and dance program at Northern Kentucky University since 2003. And he is a 50 plus year veteran of traditional, experimental, educational, and applied theater. Dr. Harris has studied and worked throughout North America, Europe, West Africa, Asia, and Australia. In addition to teaching diverse interdisciplinary theater courses that routinely include Meyerson student philanthropy project classes, Harris also acts in, directs, and costume designs theatrical productions at NKU, locally, nationally, and internationally. He is a member of Phi Beta Delta Honor Society for International Scholars and a 2010 recipient of President Obama's President's Call to Service Award, the highest level of awards recognized and honoring volunteerism. And as a Fulbright specialist, he co-wrote, costumed, directed, and played a cameo role in Sri Lanka International Buddhist Academy's world premiere production of the traditional Buddhist tale, Sanda Kindura. I'm excited about having cousin Daryl here today. And one thing that is not on his bio is that he actually designed the set of me and my husband's wedding. We had a different, a non-traditional wedding. It was actually a play and musical and all of that. And he did our set. He's so creative. I just absolutely love him. I can't wait for him to come and decorate my home. We love cousin Daryl, and we're excited to have him to talk about the arts today. Hi, cousin Daryl.
Hey, darling. How are you today?
I am doing fine. I'm so happy. Congratulations. I know last year you received tenure, and I believe it was last year at NKU.
No, I received tenure some years ago. I think last year the next milestone was getting full professor.
Full professor. Thank you. Thank you for that correction. Tenure, yeah. And full professor at Northern Kentucky University. And so I'm excited about having cousin Dr. Daryl here today. So with that being said, can you tell us a little bit about your background, where you're from? How did you get into the performing arts? And just tell us a little bit about yourself.
I have to go way back because it starts way back. My parents met. No, I'll go. I go after they met. I'm originally from East St. Louis, Illinois, which, for those of you who don't know, is right across the river from St. Louis, Missouri. And it's an entirely, entirely different world from St. Louis. There were people, when I was growing up, there were people in my neighborhood who had never crossed the river to go to the big city of St. Louis. I was raised by first generation, I don't call them migrants, but first generation people who had joined the Exodus at that time from the deep south to further north. Both parents were from Mississippi, my mother from Shibuda, Mississippi, and my father from Greenwood. They raised me to be independent of them. They raised me consciously to be an independent person, an independent thinker. And they allowed me the space to find myself and to be whoever I was. And they supported the choices that I made. So from early childhood, I lived in a house with my mother and father and an uncle and aunt who were a brother and a sister from one family who married a sister and a brother from another family. So wow. It was four adults and me. I was the only child. Yay. So I guess part of that was the exposure to a lot of adult ways of thinking, I guess, and communicating. And we were all in the house on a fairly equal basis, except I didn't work a job that brought in money. I worked a job, but not one that brought in money. A sidebar on that, my job in the house was to make good grades. And then I had to take out trash and clean the toilet, but my main job was to make good grades. I didn't realize until fairly recently how forward thinking that was of my parents. My father was essentially uneducated, grade school perhaps. My mother was a nurse, but how forward thinking that was, because I was actually investing in them. Because if I make good grades, then it was a given, you're going to go to college. So that was in our family, that was like breathing. There was no question about that. But by doing so, then that heightened the possibility that I would get financial support in college. Mm-hmm. So, and I did the job very well. I'd wake up every morning to hear my uncle playing the piano, because he was a musician. So I'd wake up every morning hearing music. He was a carpenter, but before he went out, he would play some things on the piano. And so I was always surrounded by some form of the arts. And I didn't realize how deeply that was embedded into my psyche. I loved to dance. My mother would always say, even just party dancing, etc. She says, "Dance, baby. Mama buy you a new pair of shoes." So it was another one of those things of supporting who I was and allowing me the space to find out who that was. They also raised me to be, and part of the independent piece was they raised me to choose my own clothing. Like in third grade, I was selecting my own school wardrobe with their guides, wow, how to match clothes and yada, yada, yada. But again, that was part of the independence piece. And that also embedded into me a consciousness about clothing and awareness. And it was the 50s. And as you know, our family dresses regardless. You could have 2 cents, but that 2 cents is going to buy you something that's going to look at least like $10, if not 50. So and that's across the board. So that's where that part was there. I always knew that there was an artist in there. Once again, at Christmas, I would get paint sets and things like that. But all through grade school, junior high school, and high school, I couldn't wait to get to junior high school so that I could study the arts or do something like with music or performance, etc. But I was too busy trying to get physics and chemistry and things on my records so that I could get into college. So I kept that artist pushed back. But finally, I did do music, played in the band and choir, etc. No acting, etc. Because in my area, my neighborhood, etc., things like acting or certainly not costume design or clothing design were not considered. You didn't even know those things were careers, so you weren't even exposed to those things as careers. Mm-hmm. It wasn't until I went to college at Washington University in St. Louis, Missouri, I was advised to major in Chinese, mm-hmm, because I was good with languages and I loved to travel. Hmm. So the advisor said, "Well, this would be good." And they had a superb program in Chinese at that school. Mm-hmm. Too superb, as a matter of fact. Those reasonings were not enough to keep me in class 5 hours a day, 5 days a week, only in Chinese, mm-hmm, plus the rest of things. And I was young. I said, "Oh no, this is too much." Mm-hmm. At that time, I was working with an organization called the Black Artists Group, a historic classic organization in the St. Louis area, and nationally and internationally it became. And I was also doing some dance with a show, a production at the school, where I met some students who were studying fashion design. I said, "Oh, that's a career." and that's something you could do. So I said, "Well, that makes sense," because again, I've been raised with that mentality my entire life. And that was a skill. That was something, people can always wear clothes. So at least I'll be learning how to do something that I could market at some point. So I switched majors from Chinese to fashion design. which was which, and again, I talked to my father. I said, well, this makes sense because for those reasons, I would have a skill that I can sell. And then, and it's your fault. You guys, you all trained me how to be closed conscious, all these things. So that's how that specific change and finally the change into embodying or embracing, I guess, the artist who was there the entire time, because I couldn't really push that back anymore.
So let me ask you this. How did your parents react to you saying, I want to move from being a language major to being a fashion designer? Because I'm just curious, because a lot of times some families are not supportive of the arts. They always say, get something you can fall back on, and then you end up doing that instead of pursuing your passion.
Well, exactly. And that's what I was missing. By that time, my mother was dead. So it was basically, it was just my father. And I approached it from a practical point of view. So, well, with fashion dye specifically, it has a practical element to it also, because people are going to always wear clothes. So I would be gaining a skill that I can market. The field of fashion design per se was not something that I was familiar with, or he was familiar with, anybody's familiar with, but he was familiar with having a skill. Like I said, my uncle was a carpenter, so we're familiar with craft.
Yes.
And those elements. So I think what helped with that, as opposed to say a musician or a drummer, for those of you who don't know, Dr. Houston's husband is a drummer, a jazz drummer, very successful one. One of the little kids whom I hope I had some influence on when we were growing up. It had a potential for a more practical application, even though they didn't know what that was. So I think I think it would have been different, only moderately different, had I said I wanted to be a singer or even an actor. Which ultimately that happened. But in a way, but I don't think so, because again, their thing was do what makes you happy. And I was very blessed to be raised in an environment like that. And I understand that most people do not have that luxury. And again, I was doubly blessed in that while my father was not educated, he was wise. Mm-hmm. He was like of his zillions of brothers and sisters, I feel, and many of my cousins agree, that he was the wisest of his siblings. So I think he had the wisdom to know that this would be what I would need to do to make me happy and also to find success. So they had a deeply seated concept of what life is than even I did. I think particularly for adults of that era of the 50s, et cetera, et cetera. So, so that's how it was like. Okay, in particular, well, that wasn't the kicker. The kicker was after 2 years in fashion design, I said in school and studying in fashion design, I said, okay, I want to quit school and go to Europe.
Oh no!
Exactly. Again, school was the thing. That was like the holy grail in our family. You have to go to school. Yes. But again, it was a practical approach. And my approach was, one reason I wanted to do that was because I didn't feel that I was being taught. I felt they were attempting to teach me taste. And they didn't need to do that because I'd already been taught taste. I didn't give it taste. I just needed skills. I was too young, and I was too young to realize to accept the difference and to understand that you can go to college to learn these skills that you need, to separate the two. So that you know, because I was like, what, 20? So at 20, you know, I know everything already. I knew everything when I was 16. So I ought to tell me something. So I was too young to really make a wiser decision. So that's not advice that you out there should follow. You need to go to school. Most of you, I think that's something that's not necessarily meant for everybody immediately. So my justification was that in Europe, Black artists had a longstanding tradition of being able to work based on their skill and not on a piece of paper that said you could do everything. So it was common. We have long histories of Josephine Baker's, Miles Davis, and all of these Black artists who consciously and intentionally went to Europe
And they were from East St. Louis. And they were from St.
Yes,
Louis.
Yes.
Yes. Most people don't know that. Miles is from East St. Louis. Josephine Baker's from St. Louis.
Yes. Yes. So I don't think at that point, I don't think that I was even aware enough to bring that point out. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so maybe it was in my blood. And again, one, it was surprisingly logical. And I think because of that, I think mostly it was that he was always supportive of what I felt was going to make me happy. But two, there was some logic tied to it. So with both of he was, this is a long answer, but he was hilarious to me. I had one of the people I worked with the Black artist groups in St. Louis was also working. I went to Sweden, was doing some experimental theater work in Sweden. So I was going to go join with them. First, I was going to try to make it on my own in Stockholm, which is the bigger city. I didn't like, I needed a cultural shock. I needed a cultural change because I had become complacent in St. Louis. I'd become what I had criticized many St. Louisans for being. I was just letting things happen to me. So I needed to be shocked out of my comfort zone. Mm-hmm. I asked him to just, and I said, well, and plus it'll be cheaper for you because it's cheaper to live in Europe than it is to live here. And so I asked him, well, if you can give me the same support you've been giving me while I was in school for 3 months to give me some time to get on my feet, then that should be enough and I should be moving on. 3 months and a minute passed. He like completely disappeared like dust. I didn't hear. I said, wait a minute. I didn't mean like that literally. there are no little surprise packages in the mail. Like, well, you said 3 months. Hey, Mr. My father. But it worked out. We worked, did a performance and did some touring around the area and I taught there. That's essentially that portion. Did I answer what you asked?
Yes. And so that's how you got into the arts and I apologize, I forgot their name, the Black
Artist Group.
Black Arts Group in St. Louis, which is, that's the famous theatrical organization there, right?
Yes. Yes, the people out of it, the jazz musicians, Julius Hemphill, Lionel Hewitt, I can't think of the name because I'm old. Yes. And it was a groundbreaking one from that time period. And then also, yes. And that's where I got my roots, etc. Malenka Kenyatta was the director of the formerly Robert Elliott at that time. So
when you were in that group, how did it help to shape you as an artist, being involved in that local group with all of these premier performing artists out of St. Louis? How did they shape your trajectory?
Well, once again, I did not realize the importance and the significance of those experiences. I was like flat out living life, had no real understanding of the depth of the experiences of what I was doing. I just knew I was following what was in my head and my spirit and my mind to do. Mm-hmm. With some surprising logic. So I didn't understand that these were stars, that these were mentors, that these were the depths of their artistry. I was just there sucking it all in. I was sucking in all the experiences. And that's what one of the pieces of advice I give to young people now: suck in every experience that you possibly can, and anything, but search a little bit deep, find out what it is there, and then take in those experiences. Yes, you should think about what you're doing, but in-depth pondering and analysis at this point can be helpful, but it also can be counterproductive to your getting into your body, the experiences that you need to have. So what I learned from them is, what I got in retrospect from them is an appreciation for Blackness, appreciation for our specific expression of the arts, and that it's as valid, if not more valid, than any other. Respect for myself, discipline, working with other people, allowing collaboration, and all those core life skills that are important for an artist and important for any human being. Mm-hmm. One of my recent mantras that I swiped from a children's theater company that I work with in Milwaukee is life skills through trauma skills, or life skills through theater skills. So within the theater specifically, I think more so than any other art form, everything that you need to do in life, you can apply to theater, or theater skills can give you the preparation. Even if you want to sweep floors like my father did, theater training can help that. The discipline, the doing your best to putting it all forward. So that's how I think I surprisingly stayed on track. That's how those experiences with those guys, I use guys in the generic non-binary sense of the word. So pardon me, anybody who's being offended by that specific word. Being exposed to all of that, it just put a layer, a wash of quality and of discipline and of artistic integrity that I didn't even recognize was going on at the time. I didn't really get it until years and years later. But that was what had happened at that time.
Yeah, you know, it's amazing that, you know, we can have those experiences in life and not know how amazing they were until we look back on it.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
That's why it's so important to be, as they say, be present. Always be present so you'll know, you can acknowledge what's going on. And these individuals in this program taught you so much, you know, and so many skills. Like they say, sports teaches you so many skills that you can apply to life. We know that the arts also provide you with so many skills that you can use in life. And unfortunately, the arts is one of the first things to get cut in school, in public education, in schools, and we really need more of the performing arts. As you know, the arts bring so much happiness and joy. It's nothing like watching a great comedy, right?
Exactly. Yes. And that's that being present is extremely important. And I think the sports piece was a good point, because I think, and it's similar with the performing arts, with the sports piece, many participants, they just want to win the game. They don't understand that they're learning discipline, self-control, working with others, collaborate. They don't get that. They just want to win the game. Those things are embedded, but that's not their point. It's the same. It's a similar thing with theater, particularly with musical theater. That's our program here at Northern Kentucky University is particularly known for its musical theater program, and it tends to attract people who have less of a depth about their attitudes of life. I don't want to say surface people, but it tends to be like la 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 la. But even with that, while they're la 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 la, they're getting all these very important skills that they can use in any other job. And research for years has shown the value of arts training in general, theater training, theater training specifically for employees in any discipline, because it opens your one, it prepares you, like, it's on those practical levels that I was talking about, to work with others, to problem solve, to be independent, to creatively approach things. It does those things, but it also it helps to make you more well balanced. I was, that's a tangent that's not directly related to what I was going to talk about. Yeah,
you can use that example.
Well, no, it's during one of my searches for myself, one level of myself, and those are still going on. And this new self I found is so exciting. It's like, 100 years, well, 71, not 100 years, working on it. And I'm still growing. And that's so fascinating. It's so exciting. And I'm so blessed in my worldview to still be growing. And it's something I stated from a childhood. At 95, I still want to be learning something, et cetera. So during one little phase I was going through, I was trying to find, well, who am I? What am I? What am I? What's my point of the universe? La, 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 la. It occurred to me that scientists and artists are sort of essentially the same thing, because it takes just as much creativity. Computers, I have no idea how they come up with our telephones or our typewriters. It takes just as much creativity to do biology or physiology or on all those things as it does to create a painting or a poem or a song or whatever. So I happened to be on a plane, and again, I was at the height of this pondering about this. And I don't know why it came up, but I was sitting next to the guy who at that time was the president of the National Biology Association, blah, 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 blah. And he said he acknowledged that that's actually in their field, that's the most common area of emotional distress or whatever. So most people get counseling in their field for that reason, because artists, we nuts, and we accept that we're nuts, and we're a loose brain. But with scientists, because of their field, because it's fact-based, they think they're supposed to be more rigid. And so they fight that area of themselves because they think they're supposed to be this. So he said that combining or embracing those two has been a problem in that field for years, because they don't understand, they don't want to allow that. Go ahead.
Embracing those two, what are you?
Embracing the solid, staid, staunch, rigid nature of their feel with the woogie woogie, for lack of a more intelligent word, nature to receive creative ideas. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. We as artists, we accept that, and these are very high intellectual terms. You'll find these as you get, that's a very high intellectual term. we accept that and we go with it. And some accept it, even with the arts, some have more problem accepting that with balance. Hence we have so many excesses of drugs, alcohol, sex, etc., because they don't really get, it's an honor, but it's also a weight to have creative energy flowing through you. Even in the arts, there's some dysfunction. But he was saying that premise was true, that they have to have a heightened receptors in their minds and emotions and spirits, the same as artists do, but it's just channeled differently.
Man, I've never, I'm a former artist and married to an artist, meaning I was active in the performing arts all through college, even through graduate school. And I never thought of it that way, in that we have to combine the intellectual and the creative in order to really, really reach our fullest potential, right?
Oh, absolutely. Yes.
That to your point about the computers, how can you make those type of inventions that they have if they're not using their creative minds?
Yeah,
it's something they're getting to make them even think about that. And we know, in terms of research, going back to your previous thought about performance, we know that people, young students in school, they perform better if they're involved in the arts.
Yes.
But the arts go beyond just the your educational trajectory. It can be applied to your profession. You can, as that person stated that you were sitting next to in the airport, that we need those creative energies, but we also have challenges with people who don't embrace that creative
energy. Yes.
You know, and so I appreciate you sharing that point.
I appreciate the opportunity to do so. I hope it's helpful to somebody. Yeah.
So in terms of our audience, what advice would you give them in terms of embracing their creativity and how to move forward with embracing their creativity, as well as people who want to actually pursue the performing arts or the visual arts? What type of advice and calls to action would you give our audience?
I think that everybody has some level of creativity. I hear people say, oh, I'm not creative. Oh, absolutely, you are. Everybody has some level of creativity. It may not, I don't want to say rise to the standard of being labeled an artist, because that sounds elitist or whatever. But everybody has some degree of creativity. The parent who stays at home, be it the mother or the father or the aunt, to raise a child has major creativity. You have to keep up with those. So the general advice is to keep searching within yourself to find what your natural or supernatural gift or tendency or desire is, and to honor that and to base that on what you have and not on what other people have. You can use those as inspirations, because again, I use the fact that there were students who were studying fashion design as an inspiration to, oh, that's something you can do. But that was something that connected with something that was already there. My ultimate advice, at the risk of preaching, because that's what my family does, for those of, if you have any type of spiritual connection, to follow that, to find that. For me specifically, it was Christ and the teachings of Christ, not necessarily Christianity. That's a whole nother topic. But connecting with creativity in my worldview, and I understand those of in your audience who may not agree with that, but you're asking me, you're not asking them. Creativity comes from the master creator.
Yes.
In my mind. And so that any artistic endeavor, in my experience, is a communion with the master creator. So if that is your worldview, first connect there, find out from the maker what you're made to do, and keep that open. And that doesn't necessarily mean that you have to become religious or you have to go to church or anything like that, but it does mean to connect, because that didn't happen. That happened and didn't happen in my journey, in and out for years, with still a core connection with understanding that there was a higher level than just right here. And that was something that that just was put there. So allowing yourself to go into yourself, spending time with yourself, to listen to yourself and to find out who you are. And that doesn't necessarily have to be one thing. It could be several things, and it doesn't necessarily have to stay the same thing. That's essentially, that's the core piece. Again, I know I had an atypical upbringing in that I was allowed space to do that. I understand if you have five brothers and sisters, and I don't know, if you have, there's less opportunity to do that type of thing. But even then, you can find a minute to step to the side to find out who you are. And I understand that's much more complicated than it sounds like by saying it. And it's something that it has taken me years to get to, but I believe I started that journey pretty early. Does that make enough sense?
Yes, it makes a lot of sense and it's great advice, especially as we enter the year 2021, which is many times people take the New Year's as a time to rejuvenate and reevaluate and redefine what they want to do. And what you're saying is that it's really it's a spiritual process, and that we have to embrace that spiritual process of spending time with ourselves and listening to our own spirits and our own creators to find out who we are and what we were called to do. Yes. And I like the point that you emphasize that this is an evolutionary process, and it doesn't stay the same over time. Mm-hmm. That what you are today could be different from what you're supposed to be doing 10 years from now or 10 years before today. Yes. And so we have to continually be in the process of being in touch with our spirits in order to become our best selves, as well as become our greatest selves, I guess.
Yes.
You can say. So that was great, wonderful advice.
Yes.
Go ahead.
No, and allow yourself the space to make what might appear to be, and in many cases will be, a mistake, or to make errors, and don't beat yourself up about those, because they're going to happen, because you're evolving. You're growing. You're a child, or you're a young person. You don't have it all together. Even if you're an old person, you still there's as far in relation to the universe or whatever. We're all just super young. So allow yourself the space for making errors, because all of that goes into the mush of making who you become and who you are becoming. So allow yourself that space, and don't allow others to, you can't stop them from judging you, but you can repel the judgment.
Yes.
You can listen to what's valuable to you. You know, don't throw out everything. Let it, you know, sort of strain through, listen to what's valuable, throw out the rest, because they're not perfect. Mm-hmm. And they may know something, but you don't know anything, and they're not you.
So I love that, repelling judgment. And that's judgment from others and judgment from ourselves. Because yes. So many times when we make mistakes, we beat ourselves up. And we need to give ourselves some grace. That mistake is a part of the process, you know. We always asking God for grace. We need to give ourselves some grace.
Yes.
The repelling part is so powerful, because many times we can be critical of ourselves and then accept the criticisms of others. Yes, some criticism is good to help you get better, but it's not necessarily something you want to embrace that makes you feel down upon yourself.
Exactly.
So I love that advice, and I love you, cousin Dr. Darrell.
Oh, darling, thank you so much. I appreciate it. All that is easier said than done, particularly from a young person. But it takes a journey. Just plant the seed there and let it come back each time. And particularly for artists, because we tend to be very emotional and sensitive people. So it's particularly difficult for the people in arts. And it's particularly difficult for people in any stage of minority, be it gender minority, ethnic minority, racial minority, black, brown, gender thing, because we're so socialized, pushed down, it's very difficult to climb out of that and have a positive, forward moving self-image and motivation. Mm-hmm. So it is a challenge. That's all on that.
Well, thank you so much for sharing your story with us and the great advice you have provided us today. This has just been a wonderful conversation, and I've been so blessed by it myself. And so I appreciate you being my guest.
Well, thank you. Absolutely. I appreciate the opportunity to do so. And again, I hope that's helpful to you and to your audience. I do want to, one final thing, I don't know if you're going to ask this or not, but I want to put it in there before we go out. For those of students who are going to college specifically, really anybody who's going to whatever next year, be the school of life or the university, mentors, find mentors, not just one. Find people who've gone down that road or those roads you're going, and seek their advice and their consultation. Find mentors, that's all I got, either in your specific field or your specific gender or your specific race or just who have succeeded, period. But attach yourself, seek out, because they won't necessarily. I was, when I was at, in the very earliest developmental phases of my one of myself, I was blessed that I was just given mentors. They just dropped in my path. So, I didn't acknowledge that that's what they were at the time, but in retrospect, oh, that's what that person was doing. That person was guiding me through this particular phase. As it came up later, then I aggressively sought them out. And even that it's finding somebody that clicks with you. And one mentor may only see you through a certain phase of your life. That has been my experience. But aggressively seek guidance, not from your peers, because what they know, they might know something, but somebody who's older and more experienced will know more. So, but it's especially important to those of you going to college, even quadruply important to those of you going to predominantly white institutions. It's imperative that you find mentors in those institutions of your own ethnicity and not. So you, if you're going to a predominantly white institution, you need a white mentor and you need a black or a brown or a yellow or a red mentor, because there's two different points of view that you will get, at least those two. So that's mentor is the word for moving
forward. Thank you so much for that great piece of advice for college is identify you some mentors, not just one mentor, but yes, multiple mentors that can guide you through the process. And I would even argue that you need to have mentors after you finish college.
Oh, absolutely. No, it goes on forever.
Yes, it goes on forever because they will guide you through the maze of your educational matriculation, and they will guide you through the maze of your professional yes, careers.
Absolutely. So
that is absolutely spectacular advice. Find you some mentors.
Yep.
Thank you so much, Dr. Darrell. We appreciate having you today.
Thank you so much, Dr. Ramona.
A special thank you to the incredible team of the Empowerment Zone. Terry Ungully, theme song. NADWORKS, digital support, and of course, our featured guest.
If you enjoyed my podcast, please subscribe. We are on all of your favorite podcast platforms. Be sure to rate us on Apple Podcasts too. Thank you for your continued support.